Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. We're talking about Dayton again this week, and our guest is Bob Interbitson. We'll be back with him. He's the marketing director for the ARRL, and boy, he's got a lot of information and a lot of good stories to tell. We'll be back with QSO right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this.
QSO will be broadcasting live from the Dayton Hamvention. So we want you to come by and say hello. Find our booth and drop by and visit. And while you're at Dayton, be sure and go by the ARRL booth. Pick up one of the new Field Day t-shirts. Pick up a handbook. And check your ARRL membership. If you're not current, then rejoin. They usually have some kind of deal that if you join at Dayton, you get something. Well, I'd ask him about that. But pick up the new handbook, pick up your t-shirt, your Field Day t-shirt. Matter of fact, pick up two or three. They make great gifts. And then come by our booth and wave the t-shirts at us and say hello and stop by and chat with us on the air. Looking forward to seeing everybody at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention. With us is Bob Interbitson, and he is with the American Radio Relay League. Bob, what is your call sign? I don't think I've got that memorized.
Sure, Ted. It's November Quebec 1 Romeo, NQ1R.
And let's just start right from the beginning here. Tell us a little bit about what you do with the American Radio Relay League.
Sure, Ted. I'm the marketing manager at ARRL, and probably the largest areas of reach that I have with a great team here is in the areas of membership and ARRL publication sales, all the different training materials that the organization produces.
Oh, very good. So, but now let me ask you this. Do you get to operate W1AW much at all?
I do. You know, the station, I can look out my office window and I see W1AW directly across the parking lot, and the big beams pointed my way west.
Well, you know, I guess that's always a mystique, you know, for all amateurs that at some point in time, I think they all secretly covet being able to go to Newington, Connecticut.
Absolutely, and we've got some beautiful studios with equipment that's been lent to the organization or donated by equipment manufacturers and amateur radio dealers, and it's a showcase of some of the finest amateur radio equipment, and then it's networked nicely with a great antenna farm on the property here.
It reminds me a lot of when you look at W1AW, the house, I guess I want to say, and the antenna farm reminds me an awful lot of an international shortwave radio station or some of the heritage AM stations, you know, where they built everything in the blockhouse and
that's right, you know, and a lot of folks who visit here will say, you know, was that a little bank building in Newington before it was W1AW? And we tell them no, it was built entirely for the station back in 1936.
Well, that's really incredible. Of course, the sound of W1AW was heard around the world.
That's right.
And it's world famous. I guess the thing of it is the rich heritage that goes with it. Daniel, that's something I don't know anything about. Now, that building, how far back does that building go in terms of the league?
Well, when the station was moved to higher ground after some flooding in the Brainerd Field area here in the Hartford area of Connecticut. They built the current location back in 1936. Hiram Maxim himself had purchased the property on Main Street in Newington, and you know, little did anyone know that eventually not only would that property support both the little radio station but also the administrative headquarters, which underwent a second renovation somewhere around the 70s. It's a fairly large building set back behind W1AW. So we've got a nice piece of property here. You know, way back in the day, I think the property was covered in rhombic antennas and telephone poles. And these days, there's two beautiful towers on the property, but a lot of inverted V's and VHF antennas hanging off all of that. It's really quite a fine operation.
Well, you know, that's another thing too, and that is the history of ham radio. We are so, I guess I want to say we're blessed with having the character of Hiram Percy Maxim as being the founder of the organization, because one of the most colorful people that you could ever read about or study about, a very fascinating man, an inventor. Innovative, and a man that had a tremendous sense of humor that was, our founding father of this hobby.
That's right, and he was a colorful person, and as much an inventor as an entrepreneur as well. And you know, in this region where I enjoy living in the Hartford, Connecticut area, there's a lot of people that know Hiram Percy Maxim from all sorts of endeavors that he was involved in. Everything from his yacht sailing to the Maxim silencer machine gun. All sorts of different history involved with Maxim. So we, of course, enjoy the amateur radio part of that here, but the station itself also houses some other historical records and information about Maxim and those early days of amateur radio.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, and I think it would do well for all hams to kind of read up on it a little bit, because he was just I would call the epitome of an amateur radio operator. In other words, we think about all the technology and all the things that have come down the pike, come our way by means of amateur radio. The general public doesn't have any idea how much ham radio they have in their house, you know, every day, you know. But here's a man that that was really cutting edge, and I think one of the most about him that fascinates me the most, and that is the invention of concepts, okay, like the Wolf Hong.
Boy, the dreaded Wolf Hong is something still talked about in the hallways here at ARRL, and we still use that storytelling as a good way to share the story with new radio amateurs about proper operating, proper training, being responsible stewards of the frequencies that we have. But the stories of the old man, as Maxim used to pen his stories before we knew who the old man really was, are wonderful vignettes into an avocation where people really were good stewards of this avocation for so long.
Well, yeah, I guess the thing of it is, you look at the Ready Snitch, you look at the Wolf Hong. You
know. All these great torture devices that would be used against lids.
And the thing of it is what a tremendous sense of humor. You know, I mean, that's just, and I'll tell you something, I hate to say this, but that really kind of goes begging today. You know, you don't find the humor in ham radio. This guy had a lot of insight, you know.
He did. There's a great biography written by a woman by the name of Alice Klink Schumacher, and the League actually has the book as part of its online store and library. It's still very much available, but the book is called Hiram Percy Maxim, and it's a great biography that covers much more than just his connection with radio amateurs. But if you're interested in that, that's a neat book you can get from ARRL.
There you go. That'd be a great read. The thing I was told too is there's an award sitting somewhere. I've not been there, but there's an award sitting there for the first amateur that successfully contacts Mars or the planet Mars.
That's right. The Elzer-Mays Cup, which continues to sit in one of the trophy cabinets here in the hallways at the administrative building here at headquarters. And, boy, I don't know. There's a couple of really bright young radio amateurs who we've had wonderful contact with at some of the different hamventions over the years. And I'd like to think that maybe I've gotten a chance to meet one of these kids that eventually will get to Mars in my lifetime.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that a creation of Maxim?
I actually don't know the history behind that, but I think the fellow by the name of Elzer-Mays has something to do with it as well.
Well, see, the reason why I say it was somewhere along the line I was reading that Maxim was very, very, very fascinated with the planet Mars.
Yeah.
And for various reasons. I mean, not because he was contacting aliens, but because he believed the possibility that life may exist on Mars, and because of the different color changes and things like that, he had his own theories about it, you know. And
that's pretty impressive thinking back in that era. That's pretty neat stuff. You know, the Elzer-Mays Cup is a cup that will be given to celebrate the first two-way contact between a radio amateur between Earth and Mars. And it's a carved wooden bowl, actually, from the Philippines, with two men standing in the carving. It's really quite beautiful, but I think many of us would be excited to see it be given away someday. And the cup was actually created in 1928, and it's remained with us ever since.
Wow, that's amazing. Like I said, you know, the colorful character of Hiram Percy Maxim just goes hand in hand with the W1AW station site, the building, and all the mystique that goes with it. You know, and I guess that's just a real wonderful combination of things. And we hope
a good number of your listeners will add Newington, Connecticut to the list of places they'd love to visit. And, you know, summertime is a great time to come to Newington, Connecticut, or during the fall foliage season in New England. And these are great times to see the station, have a tour of ARRL, enjoy some of the rich history here, have a picnic on the grounds, and then bring your friends.
Well, I'll tell you, we've got Dayton coming up, Bob, and tell me a little bit what you have in store and what the league is going to be doing. And you know, the other thing I want to cover here definitely, and that is that big table that you folks have that's loaded down with books and T-shirts.
Absolutely.
And
you know, that's probably the most visible part of our exhibit, but the you know, back in 2005, Dayton Hamvention approached ARRL and partnered with us on sort of beefing up the presence for the organization at Dayton. And they provided us with a big space in the Ball Arena Hall at Hare Arena, and sort of a blank slate for us to do whatever we kind of wanted to do in there. And it's really evolved into quite a large exhibit and an annual exhibit, and we call it ARRL Expo. So if you come to Hamvention, your ticket gets you into two things. It gets you into Hamvention, but it also gets you into the large ARRL exhibit area. And this year we'll support about 22 exhibits in our space, and that's about 30 ARRL staff, but another over 100 officials and program representatives and volunteers from all over the country that'll make ARRL Expo happen this year. It's going to be the centerpiece of Hamvention for sure.
Well, you know, of course, there's a lot of things you can see. What the league puts on there is a real good cross-sectional display of all kinds of things. And you have a chance to meet a lot of the league people. You get a chance to meet folks from all over the country, because folks that come in to Dayton are from everywhere. And it's because of the size of the Hamvention, of course. I guess last year now, we just kept telling people, now before, you know, when you come to Dayton, plan. Set a little cash aside. And pick up a copy of the new handbook. I mean, you have to have the new handbook every year. I'm sorry. Sometimes people say the changes are minor, but it doesn't matter, because after the years go by and you look on your bookshelf and you see all these handbooks there, you know, it really makes you look important, you know?
Sure, you know, and the handbook is probably, the 2010 edition of the handbook is probably the edition to get if you don't have a recent handbook, because that one underwent a huge revision, and we'll have loads of those at Hamvention. And actually, folks renewing their ARL membership for 3 years can actually pick up a free copy of the handbook at Hamvention. That's sort of our best deal this year at the ARL Expo. But we're going to have a whole bunch of fun things available in the huge ARL bookstore. We'll have a bunch of brand new publications that the organization just introduced, including a PIC programming book, a Storm Spotters handbook, and all of the fun Field Day gear for Field Day, which comes up very quickly in June.
You know, last year when I told everyone, I said, go to the ARRL booth and pick up your T-shirt. Get a Field Day T-shirt, and then come by the booth and wave it at us. If we're on the air talking, of course, is what I meant, you know, because, it's, you know, if we're doing an interview, you can't really stop and say hello. A lot of times we can, because we're not on constantly, but nonetheless. And I had so many people coming by waving those T-shirts at us.
Oh, that's fun, Ted. That's fun.
And a friend of mine came by the booth for a little while, and we had stepped away. And he didn't know anything about this, so he sat down, and he was talking to some people and whatnot. He was waiting for me to get back. And he said, boy, he said, the strangest thing, he said, these people come by here and they keep waving these shirts at me, you know. He had no idea.
That's super.
Didn't know what was going on. It was kind of funny, you know. But I would like to really encourage folks on a number of levels to go by at Dayton and buy a handbook and get some T-shirts there, because the T-shirts are great ways of promoting amateur radio. Now, what I mean by that is, if you buy a Field Day T-shirt, you know, you can give that to somebody that, I guess I want to say, some prospective ham, somebody that you'd like to try to get interested in amateur radio. You can give it to some of your public officials, somebody in your city. And people wear T-shirts. I mean, they really do. I mean, you see T-shirts everywhere. You know, if that's one thing we have in the U.S. is a T-shirt fetish, man. Everybody wears T-shirts, you know. And What a good way to promote Field Day and amateur radio, and that is to pick up a Field Day T-shirt. You're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R, right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas TW2010 and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com.
If you're the decision maker for any form of outdoor lighting, you're going to want to listen to this. The Light Pack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation. This lamp system is therefore classified in a new family of sources, the Light Pack induction lamp systems. LightPack induction lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications. Not only because of its high luminescence and efficiency, but especially because of its unprecedented lifetime. System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year. With a failure rate of less than 10%. With this unmatched durability, LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs.
Induction lighting is relatively new in the United States, but it's proven technology developed in Europe over 20 years ago. Therefore, claims of durability is based on real-world empirical data, as opposed to estimated design life provided by competitive lighting technologies such as LED. LightPack Systems was founded on the principles of green solutions for modern lighting through strong partnerships with the U.S. military, the University of Central Florida, and several national energy service companies. LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to 5 times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems, lightpacksystems.com.
Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air. But don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be.
This is QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R.
Well, and this year's Field Day t-shirt design actually will help you spread the word about amateur radio, because we put a special message on the back of this year's shirt. I believe the message on the back says, amateur radio, goodwill, service, and fun. So we think that's a pretty neat message to share with the world about amateur radio. Goodwill, service, and fun.
That's excellent, because, you know, one thing I will have to say, and I'm going to, now, here we go. This is where I'm going to editorialize here, so just kind of plug your ears off. And sometimes I think we as hams do not portray the fun side of the hobby enough. We have become, and I'm not trying to be mean-spirited. I'm just saying we just don't, you know, it is so much fun. And yet, sometimes we don't really portray the fun. We come across too serious. I mean, it's like, well just, we participate in emergencies, and we do. And we do, you know, and that's a good thing. But you know what? The whole idea of Field Day, which is an emergency exercise, so to speak, you know, people have so much fun at Field Day. I mean, I'll tell you what, we broadcast live all Field Day. We talk to locations all over the country, and these guys get to talking about their chefs and what they're cooking, and people coming in, and they pass the phone around, and we talk to different people, and I mean, it's just a load of fun. I can't think of anything where a group of people get together and have more fun than they do on Field Day.
They do. And, you know, a lot of clubs organize their annual club picnic or annual club social gathering around Field Day. So, you know, there's a serious aspect to Field Day, and that's, you know, seeing if we can pull all of our gear out of our homes and our basements and our shacks and getting it on the air. But there's certainly a great fun aspect to Field Day. In fact, I think one of my favorite parts of the brand new Aerial Field Day handbook is some of the recipes that were included in that book.
Well, you know, yeah, the thing of it is, though, but there's a lot of things about ham radio that's fun. Now, I'll just give an example. My my older son, David, who's right at the 30 mark, he'll take his son, Brian, which is my grandchild. He's Brian's 5, and they go off to the park, and he takes his QRP rig, He takes his portable antenna that he takes with him, the Transworld TW2010, sets it up out there in the park, and they sit there and they operate. And of course, people come around. What is this? What are you doing? You know, and it's just fun. He does it just basically for the fun involved in it. He really enjoys it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, there's an aspect to it over the last couple of years that we've really worked hard to promote, and that's the GOTA station. Get on the air, GOTA, G-O-T-A. And this is a beginner station that we encourage all field day operations, all clubs organizing a field day operation, to establish a fairly simple, bulletproof station that they can use to help newcomers get on the air, something that's not maybe so intimidating as some of the other fancier stuff that's out there these days, and really encourage the youngsters, the new licensees, to make that first contact actually at the field day site. And we're convinced that when you get on the air is when the bug bites. And there's no better way to get somebody hooked into amateur radio than to actually sit them in front of a radio with a microphone and get them on the air. So the Get on the Air station is an aspect of field day that we really think is pretty neat.
Well, let's talk now. What do you think we're going to have at Dayton this year? Now, I know that last year, I walked around all the ARRL stuff, and I mean, there was like, how many booths did you guys have? I mean, you must have had...
I know. We're in the 20-plus range, and we're there again this year. It's kind of viral, but it's exciting. You know, one of the booths that makes a return, Ted, is the Aero Project Building booth. It was debuted last year. It was very successful, and we'll bring that back again this year. That involves one of our lab engineers, Bob Allison, and a couple of other volunteers actually helping people homebrew right at Hamvention. There'll be live classes. You can sit in front of a soldering iron and actually go through a handful of components, circuit boards, and try your hand at soldering and walk away with a finished kit. I believe this year the kits are a digital clock and a 24-hour clock, of course, and a keyer. So there'll be two neat projects that folks can build. And this is for anybody who wants to build, whether you've done it before or it's been a number of years since you've handled a soldering iron or if you've never done it before. This is perfect for just about everybody. There'll be a ARRL on the web booth where folks can explore the new ARRL website and even establish their ARRL online profile using some of the social networking tools of the new ARRL website. And if you come by and create your profile, you'll actually get a gift certificate to use in the store just for setting up a profile. Among some of the popular returning booths will be an exhibit for volunteer examiners. I think the league has somewhere around 30,000 volunteer examiners, so that's always a popular one. There'll be an education and technology display. There'll be a group of volunteers supporting ham radio and scouting for both Boy and Girl Scouts. And then new this year is a brand new emergency communications exhibit, which will include Mike Corey, who's the league's new emergency preparedness manager. And folks can come by the booth and meet Mike and talk about MCOM training opportunities, resources, how to find their local emergency service volunteers. That ought to be a really popular booth, too.
Well, you know, you said something about just for filling out the profile, and I was making some notes here while you were talking, and I'm not multitasking. So you said just for filling out a profile, they get what now?
They'll get a gift certificate, I believe, for $5 that they can use over in the ARRL store. So you fill out a profile, and then you walk over to the store and get your, and then redeem your $5 gift certificate for a field day pins. I think those are about $5. But anyway, the point is that we really want folks to explore the new ARRL website, and the strength of the new site is the social networking between ARRL members. And so if you're a member and you come by the league's booth in Dayton, we'll help you set up your profile. And your profile is simply a way to tell other radio amateurs what you do in amateur radio, what your interests are. And also you can upload a photo of yourself to the profile. You can friend other amateur radio operators through the site. It's a pretty neat tool.
Okay, it sounds a bit like a. It sounds a little bit like a. Like a Facebook kind of thing going on there.
It does. But, of course, the interest here is to network radio amateurs around the interests that they have. And there's some things that you just can't do on Facebook that you'll be able to do on this ARRL landing page.
Now, it's like, well, you know, actually, Facebook's pretty limited. You know, I mean, and if you're like I'm interested in... The like you said, the other amateurs that I run into on Facebook, and the chat's okay, but I'm not in, and that's just me now, just me. I'm not into the mafia wars and all this other stuff that people do up there, and God bless them, I hope they have a lot of fun, but you know, I'd rather be on the air doing something on the 17 meter band as to be messing around
there
in mafia
that's
wars.
Right, that's right.
Now, when you mentioned, I just had a question asked me here. That makes perfect sense.
No
then.
Problem. And of course, that's American Radio Relay League, and a lot of folks say, "Well, what's the relay mean?" And of course, way back in the very early parts of this organization, you know, the interest was to relay signals over relay messages over short distances. It was very exciting to imagine sending a message from Hartford, Connecticut to Springfield, Massachusetts by radio. But even to do that required a number of radio amateurs between Hartford and Springfield to relay that message from station to station. And of course, what became state to state eventually became country to country and then around the world, but the relays always stuck.
Well, you know, yeah, that's right, because you had, at that particular point in time, and I don't know if you listened to any of the traffic nets. They call them traffic nets. And, of course, a lot of folks ask me, younger folks that just come on the scene, say, what do they mean by traffic net? You know, are they directing traffic? And yeah, they are in a way.
That's right, yeah. The National Traffic System is a great way to connect this organization back with its roots, which really involved a large network of people with radios being able to receive messages and then accurately relay them to the next radio amateur up the stream. And some folks were able to make that connect box down the road, and others with better stations were able to communicate state to state. And of course, these days, traffic handling is just as important, but we're using all sorts of different tools. We're using digital tools like WinLink, integrated with emergency communication volunteers, and they're carrying medical information or logistical information for the served agencies that they're supporting.
Well, you know, I guess what I was saying is, you know, I listen to a lot of the traffic nets, and there's not a lot of traffic handled verbally like there used to be. The old radiograms, you'd fill them out, you know, and...
That's right. There's still some of that, but not nearly at the level that there used to be. And, of course, a lot of that's moved off either to the web or when the Internet's not available in an emergency situation. Even radio amateurs are relaying that type of information digitally these days. You can collect a lot more information and of course, record it much more accurately if you manage it digitally.
Well, you know, but it's fun to go back and visit that time because I can recall when the national traffic system was operating, and you tuned in typically to a net, and it seemed like it would take forever for those guys to get those messages across. In other words, they would go very slowly and write the message down. And I mean, there was a method in regards to it too. There's a format that they followed, and you kind of had to learn that format if you wanted to handle traffic or be part of that traffic handling system. And I remember just sitting there listening for hours on these nets where they would pass. Of course, at that time, there was no digital communication. And for the most part, it was all handwritten and delivered, you know, by means of amateur radio, amateur to amateur. And then finally, maybe the last person in the chain would pick up the telephone and call the person on the other end. You know, that would get the radiogram, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. I think when I was a radio amateur in my early years, I think one of the first times I got to enjoy being on the receiving end of one of those messages was a birthday gram from my local radio club, and they used the national traffic system to get me that birthday message.
You know, sometimes I wonder, though, with all of the interconnections that we have by means of Internet and... digital modes. I wonder sometimes if it would not be a good idea to do something like generate birthday messages, get well greetings, happy anniversary. I know that sounds maybe a little trite, but I mean, it would be a cool thing to do only because I really believe that it would help promote the hobby. You know, if you're sitting there and your phone rings and the guy on the telephone says, "Hi, you know, I'm W1 XXX or whatever, and I'm located here. I'm a radio amateur, and I have a message for you, you know, from so-and-so." Boy, you know, today that's just like something unheard of. You know?
It is, and that's that personal touch and the thought that somebody went through that system to get you a message. I think that makes it pretty special.
Yeah, that's almost as good as paying somebody to jump, you know, dress up in a gorilla suit and go sing happy birthday to somebody. You know, I mean,
that's right. Well, there's so much we can do from a recruiting standpoint, and you know, I hope folks really come out in large numbers to Dayton this year because Dayton Hamvention has a whole bigger theme for the event around radio clubs being the centerpiece of the event, and we'll have so many resources there to help folks with recruiting and instructing and nurturing new hams. And the National Traffic System is one of those stories that we're happy to tell you there too.
Now, let me ask you a question here because I was instructed by Alan Pitts. Of course, you know who Alan is, don't you?
Oh, yes. If I bang on my floor, he can hear me below.
Anyways, he said, ask him about get involved in. And I don't know what that is. So
You bet. There's a big theme for the entire ARL exhibit space this year, and it's called Get Involved. Get involved in emergency communications. Get involved in clubs. Get involved in educational endeavors. Get involved in radio sport. And we'll have program representatives from all of these different areas, emergency communications, education, radio sport, clubs, that will be able to help you find out different ways to get involved in these particular niche areas of amateur radio. For instance, we're often approached by teachers or instructors who want to organize a radio club for a group of young people. Well, we can help you with questions about how to become an affiliated club. What are other clubs doing to help youth? What sort of programs are popular with radio clubs? How do you get a club call sign? How do you get liability insurance or equipment insurance for a radio club? So that's just one area on clubs that we can talk about. For emergency communications, we'll have representatives there that can help folks find their section emergency coordinator. To build your first deployment go kit. A go kit is sort of a box that you keep in your house that has all the emergency communication equipment and maybe some food rations and maybe some supplies and maybe a vest and a hat, all the things that you might need in an emergency to help respond as a radio amateur in an emergency deployment. What's a ham aid kit? What are some of the resources to help you train to become an emergency communications volunteer? So we're going to use this Get Involved theme throughout the entire ARL area, and whether you're a new amateur or a well-seasoned one, we'll help you find ways that you can become involved or get more involved with amateur radio.
You know, that's a great theme because, you know, and I think a lot of folks are a little, I want to say, intimidated to get involved in some things. In other words, they almost need a little push. They need an invite. You know, they need somebody to grab them by the neck and pull them aside and say, "Hey, come on, help me with this," or And I really think that's what it's all about. You're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R, right after this. How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Transworld Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air. If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look forward to it.
Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com.
QSO will be broadcasting live from the Dayton Hamvention, so we want you to come by and say hello. Find our booth and drop by and visit. And while you're at Dayton, be sure and go by the ARRL booth. Pick up one of the new Field Day t-shirts. Pick up a handbook. And check your ARRL membership. If you're not current, then rejoin. They usually have some kind of deal that if you join at Dayton, you get something. Well, I'd ask them about that. But pick up the new handbook. Pick up your t-shirt, your Field Day t-shirt. Matter of fact, pick up two or three. They make great gifts. And then come by our booth and wave the t-shirts at us and say hello and stop by and chat with us on the air. Looking forward to seeing everybody at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention.
At QSO, we've got a new prize closet and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email. And go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your
This
email.
Is QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R.
Yeah, this is sort of our job at the American Radio Relay League is really to digest and organize and present the amateur radio service in a way that helps get more people involved. We spoke a few minutes ago, Ted, about how when folks get on the air at field days, the bug bites. By getting on the air, that's a super way of getting somebody hooked into amateur radio. But if your passion is emergency communication, maybe all you need is to get in touch with your section emergency coordinator and be invited to a meeting, a club meeting, or a simulated emergency test, or a road race where they're using amateur radio for public service, to really have the bug bite you and want to do more of this, or to be invited to a radio club that's a dynamic club with great program opportunities and social opportunities to meet other hams, or amateurs who like to work with school teachers to bring their equipment and their resources into classrooms to teach wireless technology literacy to young people. maybe not with the goal of turning a bunch of fifth graders into hams, but certainly to leave them walking away with a greater appreciation of what radio is, because young people are faced with radio everywhere they go. Even their wireless keyboards and computer mouse are all operating on radio frequencies these days. But it's magic to them, and it's the role of the radio amateur community to help tell that story and break it down and explain it.
Well, you know, I think one thing that's important, and I think it's something we all ought to consider, and that is this. Once we're in the hobby, and we kind of carve out our niche, so to speak, you know, what we like to do and the people we like to hang around with, and, you know, we become kind of cliquish, if that makes any sense. It's just a tendency that hams have, and I think it's normal. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I think it's really important for the hobby that we consider, especially with something like this program you're talking about, get involved, and that is to invite other people. Go out of your way to observe someone who is standing maybe on the sidelines.
That's right. In church, we might call that evangelism, but, you know, we can call it the same thing in amateur radio. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of evangelizing for something you're passionate about, and we think it's pretty important for radio amateurs, especially those of us who've been in the service for a long time, to sort of spread the news and do a good job at welcome and build strong radio clubs that are places where people want to come for good programming and good networking. So this is all very important to the longevity of the amateur radio service, is getting people involved and recruiting for the next generation of radio amateurs.
You know, I think a lot of folks sit on the sidelines, and in their mind, they kind of rehearse some of the things they would like to do or some of the things they'd like to be involved in. But they're too shy or too timid, or they feel too self-conscious, you know, to jump in the middle or to try to become part of, you know, of the group, you know. So they kind of they just sit quietly on the sidelines thinking in their mind one of these days, you know. So I think it's good if we take the time to make those observations, look around for those people because they are there, and make a phone call, befriend somebody, talk to another amateur in your group, and the two of you approach the person and say, hey, you know, we'd like for you to come out and join us with this, or how would you like to head up the whatever committee, or how would you like to be in charge of this year, you know, and kind of make room for these folks and maybe design or create a little space for them, because I think that there's a lot of folks, like I said, a lot of times, you know, you find that 20% of the people do 80% of the work, you know, 20%.
And that 20% is getting tired, and certainly by recruiting and encouraging newcomers to get involved, we do ourselves a favor by spreading around the division of labor in our radio clubs. And isn't it more fun when there's more people involved?
Oh, absolutely. You know, but now here's something else, and I'm gonna kind of pick a scab here a little bit, and that is one of the problems we have, it's a difficult thing to manage, and that is when we get into any organization, and I don't care if it's a church or whatever, and I like to think that in amateur radio that we're good at managing these kind of things and overcoming these kind of obstacles, and that is the folks that get very turf oriented. You know, they get, this is my area and you stay out of here. You know,
That's right.
You know, I've been doing this for 50 years and by God, I'm not changing a thing. You know, we got to be careful about that. I really do believe that, because the best Elmers in the world that I have met, and I've been lucky enough to know, were people who really and truly disappeared. In other words, they just got out of the way. They'd invite you over and say, can you do this? And all of a sudden, they left the room, and there you are. You're in the, you know, you're sitting in the seat. And that's a real beautiful way to pass something on to someone else. And I think one of the things we got to realize in that is we are really happiest when we do have other folks around us participating and working with us. And one of the things we have to make an effort of, and that is opening up our minds and opening up our hearts to welcome new people into the circle and to applaud them and to be their mentors and to be their supporters, you know, so to speak. And that sometimes means that we've got to move somebody off to the side that's holding up the show. In other words, somebody that's just, you know, in there for their own personal reasons or whatever, and they don't really care about someone else. You know, we need to find a... We got to do like the Eskimos, you know, where they set the old people out on the iceberg, you know.
and a lot of that can be done by leading by example. You know, when folks see that you're successful in your interaction with other people, some of that will rub off. But that's a good observation, and it's important, I think, for all of us to sort of hear that, Ted. And that's sometimes we are obstacles to our own storytelling in amateur radio, too. We want to present a hobby or an avocation or a service that is forward-looking. We don't want to forget what our roots were or where we came from, but we also don't want to forget that we're competing with a lot of other interests these days. And if the story that we present is one of your grandfather up in the attic tuning in signals, then if that's the only story we tell, you know, that's not as exciting today for folks to want to become involved in. And if we squash a newcomer's new ideas at the first meeting that they come to, they're not going to come to the next radio club meeting. And if we're sort of cliquish on our local repeater, well, that's not going to feel very open, regardless of whether or not you call your repeater an open repeater. So we sort of have to be aware of our own surroundings and the way that we welcome new folks and realize that the next generation is going to do it somewhat different than we did.
Well, you know, I guess the thing, too, and that is that we have to keep in mind that the ham radio hobby really is not for everyone, and so therefore... there are people who are just simply not going to care about the hobby. There are people who are not going to care about it maybe as much as, or as passionately as we do. But there's still a great deal of people who are out there, and I run into this with shortwave listeners. I get emails from shortwave listeners all the time. They say, well, I'm going to get my ham license. I'm going to get my ham license. You know, there's a large group of people out there that really do love the hobby and its nature. And these are great candidates to pull in. And, of course, when these folks get their technician licenses and they join the ranks of our clubs and whatnot, this is a perfect chance to get those folks elevated to a level where their interest is intense and higher, and they want to upgrade and get the general ticket and eventually the extra and become involved locally as well as on a national level in some cases. You're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R, right after this.
It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Lendus, Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW. The Motor City.
QSL will be broadcasting live from the Dayton Hamvention, so we want you to come by and say hello. Find our booth and drop by and visit. And while you're at Dayton, be sure and go by the ARRL booth. Pick up one of the new Field Day t-shirts. Pick up a handbook. And check your ARRL membership. If you're not current, then rejoin. They usually have some kind of deal that if you join at Dayton, you get something. Well, I'd ask them about that. But pick up the new handbook. Pick up your t-shirt, your Field Day t-shirt. Matter of fact, pick up two or three. They make great gifts. And then come by our booth and wave the t-shirts at us and say hello and stop by and chat with us on the air. Looking forward to seeing everybody at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air. But don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. This is QSO, and now back to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R. With the American Radio Relay League, one of the things I wanted to talk about was membership. And the reason why I want to discuss membership is because I think it's important.
Sure, I think
And I know as a marketing, the marketing guy, you know, I'm sure folks come to you and say, well, how can we get, what can we do to increase the membership rolls, or how can we do this, or how can we, you got any ideas, you know, Bob, how are we going to do this? One of the things I'd like to talk about right now, and that is, I think a lot of folks let their ARRL memberships lapse, not because they're unhappy with the league. I think it's just they forget, you know, they just flat forget, you know. And I had it happen to me one day. Someone said to me, are you a member? Oh, yeah, I'm a member of the ARRL. And then I got to thinking about it. Wait a minute. Gosh, it's been 3 years since I renewed my membership.
That's right. And, you know, the regular membership in the United States is $39 a year. And
what a deal.
Sometimes when folks hear the $39, they quickly equate it with their $39, some sort of $39 utility bill that they receive each month for something that they do. And we remind folks that it's easy for the membership dues to fall off the radar because we only ask you for it once a year, sort of like public television or public radio. You know, we're only looking for that $39 from you once a year. But there's better ways for us to help folks keep it on the radar. One of the ways is to develop a profile on the new ARRL website when you join, so that we can send you out a renewal notice both by mail, but also a friendly reminder a couple months before your membership expires on email. And these days, we're finding that the majority of ARRL members are renewing online, which is great. Of course, that reduces some of the administration costs for the organization. But if we know we have a relationship with you online, well, then we know that between those monthly deliveries of QST Magazine to your mailbox, you're also finding out about news and information on the website on a daily or weekly basis. And you know, if you stay informed, you're much less likely to let your membership fall off the radar.
Well, you know, the course of the league's website has been redone, and the new website is fantastic. I mean, I you know, there's not very many websites impress me, because son Matt and the rest of the family have dabbled in creating websites and hosting and all that for you know, since they were just little kids, and so it's very seldom that I see a website that actually I say, wow. And, of course, with me, I look at it not just from the standpoint, is it pretty, but is it functional? Can you get around in this thing? Can you find what you're looking for? And there's nothing worse than getting on a website that's real pretty, and you're looking for something so simple as a phone number, and, I mean, you just can't find it. I mean, it's like, where did they bury this, you know? And the ARRL website is intuitive. It's simple to operate and to navigate, and it's very cosmetically pretty. I mean, you look at it, it's just laid out very well. And of course, if you're a member, you get a username and password, and then you can access different parts of the website that you can't just if you're a visitor. One of the things that is absolutely the most fascinating thing on earth, to me it is, I think probably to a lot of hams, I've gone to Hamfest and I've seen these guys selling boxes of their old QSTs.
Yeah.
And I would say, why do you want to sell these things? And the guy says, well, you know, this isn't all of them. The bulk of them are still back at the house. I've just running out of room, you know. And so, anyways, they pass them along to someone else. Well, up in the upstairs part of our house, I've got several bookcases. And, I mean, they are absolutely full of QSTs going back to, my goodness, even to the 50s. You know, you watch the sizes of the magazine change, you know. And that's all well and good, but, you know, even with all those QSTs in that bookshelf, if I was trying to find a single article, I could spend days looking for it.
Exactly, yeah.
But on the ARRL website, you can go up, and QST is there going back how far, Bob? How they archived this? Tell us a little bit about that.
1915, if you can believe it. This was sort of the genesis of this project. Actually started quite a number of years ago when we started to scan, just around the time when scanning technology became accessible for publishing operations like our own here. We started to scan the big archive of QST Magazine from December 1915 all the way up through present day. And for a number of years, we distributed that for sale on CD-ROM until, you know, this fancy thing called the web came around, and bandwidth started to become cheaper and hard drive space. And ultimately, we took all of those scans just a couple of years ago and put them into a huge database online available to all members. And presently, members can search the entire QST database from 1915 through about 2006. And members who donate to ARL through the ARL Diamond Club program get even greater access to the most current years. But I still think, you know, general members can access December 1915 through December 2006 QST all online, and we think that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, in the way it's indexed, if you want to find something like, I remember some project they had, I think they called it the Tuna 2. It was in a tuna fish can, you know, or something
that's
like
right.
That. You know, and you can type in Tuna 2 and bang, there it is. You know, I mean, anything you remember that was in QST, if you were just a young kid and you were, you know, looking through the magazine and you saw a project that was in there and you think, boy, I'd love to build that someday. If you can even vaguely remember anything about it and you do a keyword search, you can find it right there. I mean, it pops right up and there's the article.
The power of the archive is really the index. And, you know, there was no real easy way to index a magazine that was printed on a printing press back in, you know, the 20s and 30s. So all of those were painstakingly indexed by hand by staff and volunteers who sat in front of a database and cataloged each article in QST. And you're right. I just tried it just now, Ted. I typed in tuna and QST, and I got a whole list of all the articles on the Tuna Tin and the Tuna Tin 2 transmitter. So it was pretty neat.
Yeah, actually, I noticed at Dayton and a few of the other ham fests, there's a fellow that travels around that builds kits or supplies kits, and all the components are inside the can. And you put a can opener on it, and you open it up, and all the components are there, and you build a little kit. I think it's marvelous, especially for kids.
It is. QRP is another great way to get involved in an aspect of amateur radio that has a really neat community. There's contests for QRPers, and there's a lot of enthusiasm among low-power operators. That's a neat niche in amateur radio.
I was going to say, though, that is so cool that you folks have a section where people can come over and actually do hands-on soldering at the Dayton Hamvention. I mean, I know that to some people sounds kind of trite, but it really isn't, because younger people today, especially young folks, they've never held a soldering iron in their hand, have no idea what they're doing, and to have someone stand there and say, no, heat it up like this, and show you what to do, when they walk away, they really feel like they've accomplished something, they've learned something, you know, and go ahead.
You know, that probably one of my favorite photographs last year from the project building booth was a fellow that looked like he was in his 70s sitting next to a young man who was about 10 or 11 years old and building the same project. And, you know, that was a really neat thing for us to find out what happened with this project building booth is, you know, it broke down all of the age barriers and all of the experience barriers and put everybody in front of some nice equipment. You know, we did a nice job working with amateur radio operators who know how to build things for training programs to build a good circuit and assemble equipment using a nice set of components. And who doesn't enjoy getting in front of that soldering iron for the first time? The young man's eyes were lit up, and then another father brought his son over to me, and he had a small burn on the back of his hand. And I said, "Oh boy, did you burn yourself on the soldering iron?" And the kid with a big grin on his face said, "He said, yeah. He says, I'm really excited. I got my first soldering iron burn here at Dayton." And it was a little thing like that, but you know, you should have seen the look on his face when he was holding his little kid up to me just to show me that he had completed it.
That's incredible. And there's nothing better than having your mom, you know, tell you, if you drip that stuff again on my coffee table, I'm going to kill you.
it's a neat experience. So we'll be doing that round the clock at Dayton. That project building booth will be open for anyone to come and build one of the projects there, and to engage the engineers and technicians in that booth who are there to sort of give you a flavor of what they also do in the Aero laboratory on a larger scale. Part of the fun of building a project with the Aero lab engineers is that they fine-tune it using some equipment right from the lab. And you'll get to see some of the gear that they use for product review testing used on your own little test, on your own little project.
That's wild. I think that is so cool. And I'm hoping this year that we have a lot of a new young people visiting Dayton, you know, coming in and being able to look around. And of course, the American Radio Relay League booth is going to be a big key part of that if they do come and visit.
Well, yeah. Well, Ted, we hope young people will visit the Aero Youth Lounge, and we actually have an entire area set up. Being organized by two of our top youth volunteers, Andrea Hartledge and Scott Hartledge. Andrea's well known among amateur radio circles as sort of a she's now over 21, but for many years she was just a bright shining star as one of the youngest and most brilliant young people in the amateur radio service. She knows how to recruit, and she knows how to teach, and she knows how to interest her peers in the amateur radio service. And her father have designed this youth lounge concept for HamFests, which they'll bring to the ARL exhibit area this year. And really, it's just a fun space for young people of any age to congregate and talk and network and have fun and play games and exchange ideas and eat snacks and listen to music and scavenger hunt and fox hunt and all sorts of stuff. So we expect that the Youth Lounge will be one of the most popular booths for folks, and we encourage even older folks to come by and just see what's going on there, because their support of the young people will be very important as well.
Now, you know, you folks have a ham station set up there at Dayton, or at least you did last year.
We won't this year, but we did last year as part of the national convention. We invited the Dayton Hamvention to organize a special event station right in the space, but there will be a special event station at Hamvention this year, but I believe the Hamvention organizers will have it located somewhere else on the property.
Well, I didn't know. I know last year I got a lot of feedback from the station you guys were operating there, and there was a lot of folks that stopped by, you know, as guests and operated for a period of time, and we got a lot of feedback on that. I was going to mention that to you, and I didn't know if you were doing that this year, but so last year, now what was the difference between, you said the convention, I guess you have the convention sometimes apart from Dayton.
Yeah, last year was actually Dayton Hamvention was also the ARL National Convention. And on some years when it's a national convention, there's a couple of other exhibits that come in with being a part of a national convention. One of those is a special event station for W1AW, and so we had that last year. And the other one is the Wolf Hung initiation ceremony, which we had last year as well. The next two national conventions for the league will actually be in Plano, Texas at HamCom in 2011. And at the Pacific Division Convention on the West Coast in 2012. So those are two national conventions coming up in the next couple of years.
Well, very good. Now, in regards to league membership, we got onto this and we kind of got distracted. $39 a year is what it costs. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. Now, you not only do you get your little trusty membership card, it does not come with a decoder ring, but You do get QST. Now, you know, is there any magazine on the planet you can subscribe to for a fee of $39 a year?
I know. We sort of shake our heads. I don't think we've had a dues increase since 2003. And I'm not aware of any one of those being planned right now, especially with the economy the way it's been. I think the organization has done a really great job to tighten its belt and help do our part for the large number of members who are both on fixed incomes and members who just can't afford an increase in dues right now. So, yeah, $39 a year is all it takes. Gets you QST Magazine, access to the Aero website with some really unique members-only features, like that archive we spoke about, some of the social networking tools available on the new site. Also gives you access to the Aero Technical Information Service. And what ham hasn't had an issue with their equipment or a ground or a pesky RFI problem and just wishes that they had a way to pick up a phone and talk to someone who can get them through that issue? And that's one of the things that this organization does every day of the week, is respond to the technical questions of its members. And we do that electronically through email, and we also do that by phone. And it's a very popular service of the organization, too.
Now, if you
so
pick up
much
the phone,
more than just a magazine. This is a membership association with a diverse amount of programs and services. In the building I work in, there's all sorts of program representatives talking to members on a daily basis.
So if you pick up the phone and you call the ARRL because you have a technical problem and you're at your wit's end, and your patience is gone, you know, and your wires are frayed and the insulation's coming off your brain, you know, you are not going to get connected to India.
No, you're not. You're going to get connected with the Aero Laboratory and actually get to speak to someone who can help you. And that's a pretty neat service. It's one that clinched my own personal interest in this organization when I was only 12 years old, and my dad helped me get an SB-102 Heathkit radio from a TV repair shop. And, boy, we couldn't find the manual for that anywhere. And I called the Technical Information Service, and 3 days later, a photocopy of the entire Heathkit manual came to me from the league's archives. And with a small note that said, if your parents can sling it, we'd appreciate a couple dollars to cover the copies.
That's very cool. That's a very, very cool story. You're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R, right after this.
If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only, right now only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
If you're the decision maker for any form of outdoor lighting, you're going to want to listen to this. The LightPack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation. This lamp system is therefore classified in a new family of sources, the LightPack induction lamp systems. LightPack induction lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications, not only because of its high luminescence and efficiency, but especially because of its unprecedented lifetime. System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year. With a failure rate of less than 10%. With this unmatched durability, LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs. Induction lighting is relatively new in the United States, but it's proven technology developed in Europe over 20 years ago. Therefore, claims of durability is based on real-world empirical data, as opposed to estimated design life provided by competitive lighting technologies such as LED. LightPack Systems was founded on the principles of green solutions for modern lighting through strong partnerships with the U.S. military, the University of Central Florida, and several national energy service companies. LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to five times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems. lightpacksystems.com.
QSO will be broadcasting live from the Dayton Hamvention, so we want you to come by and say hello. Find our booth and drop by and visit. And while you're at Dayton, be sure and go by the ARRL booth. Pick up one of the new Field Day t-shirts. Pick up a handbook. And check your ARRL membership. If you're not current, then rejoin. They usually have some kind of deal that if you join at Dayton, you get something. Well, I'd ask him about that. But pick up the new handbook. Pick up your t-shirt, your Field Day t-shirt. Matter of fact, pick up two or three. They make great gifts. And then come by our booth and wave the t-shirts at us and say hello and stop by and chat with us on the air. Looking forward to seeing everybody at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention. At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, "I want to win." Put that in the text somewhere in that email. And go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, "I want to win," because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, "I want to win." Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email. This is QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R. But I guess the thing I would hear, now here's what the road I wanted to go down, and I do this every once in a while. I get a lot of emails from folks that really they get on me and they say, "Why do you support the ARRL? Because I have a problem with that organization, and I've dropped my membership, and I don't plan on rejoining because they just really made me mad." You know.
Sure.
Okay. So I sit back and I think about this, and here's the deal. This is on my end of the on my end of the phone, so to speak. I don't agree with everything I hear that comes out of Newington, Connecticut. Okay, I don't. But do I agree with anything that comes out of anywhere? come on, folks.
Yeah, it's like that with any democratic organization. Mm-hmm. This is a democratic organization. We're sort of organized differently than some other nonprofit organizations in that your board of directors is voted regionally. So we're organized in divisions across the country, and local radio amateurs vote for who's going to sit on the board of directors. And then the board of directors represent the interests of their region at the table. And so decisions are made often at the often representing the issues that are impassioned in the regions. Directors work with their regional radio amateurs as constituents, almost like a senator would work with the constituents in their congressional district.
Well, you know, I guess the thing what I'm saying is that you know, if you join a church somewhere, you're not gonna like everything about it. You know?
No, but you have the biggest influence working from within than from without. So we hope folks realize that you know, at 156,000 members, everybody's got a voice, but you've got a voice among another 155,999 members who have a voice also.
You know, let me say this,
not always fair for the squeaky wheel to get the grease, but it's certainly important for us to be as responsive as we can to membership.
Okay, well, let me say this, though. Okay, now, like I said, I get emails from folks all the time saying, you know, but here's the deal. This is all part of your, I want to say, your Get Involved program that you've got going on, and that is, if there's something you don't like, all the more reason to pay the $39 and voice your opinion. I mean, if you want to change the face of amateur radio, if you really want to impact the hobby, it's much easier and a lot more practical to do it inside as a league member than it is to sit on the sidelines outside and grumble. So I tell this to everyone, and we've gone down this road a number of times, and actually I've had personal conversations with people who've actually went back and renewed their membership, you know, because they just weren't thinking about it that way. And some of them renewed their membership and would not tell me they did.
Sure.
You know, which is fine. You know, but I think what I'm saying is we as hams, and I noticed, and this is what I said earlier, sometimes we just don't make it fun enough, you know, on the air, and we don't make it fun enough in private. We kind of portray this as being way, way too serious at times. The league's very founder, Hiram Percy Maxim, had the best sense of humor on earth, you know, and I think one of the best examples of a diplomat and an administrator and somebody who knew how to get people together and rally them around a cause. If you are, I think everyone needs to be a member. At least that's my opinion. You know, and I mean, I don't care if it's a love or a hate relationship. You still need to be a member because your voice is important. Your ideas are important, and the only way you're ever going to get them across is by being a part of the organization and being able to interact with other members and voice that opinion. Because a lot of times there's people sitting on the sidelines that don't like something, and they don't realize that there may be a whole lot of people that don't particularly care for whatever it is that you don't like. But unless you voice your opinion and you get with the group and are able to interact with the entire group of people, then you're just a bystander. You know, you're a bystander. You're just sitting on the sidelines.
That's right,
you know.
That's right. And you know, one of the things that we sometimes will use to help non-members understand a little bit about how important it is to be a member. All radio amateurs benefit from the advocacy that the ARRL. One of the primary functions of the organization does for amateur radio. The frequencies that we enjoy and the service that is written into the federal register requires vigilance at the table in government. And the league does that. We sit at tables where frequencies are talked about in terms of dollars and cents, and we try to do our best as leaders in the organization to represent the radio amateur service at the table. You know, whether you're a member or you're a non-member, you're going to benefit from the league's involvement in Washington representing this service. We hope more times than not that the result of that work is something that you can support. And we realize that sometimes folks disagree with a position that the organization has taken. But that vigilance has ensured the longevity of the amateur radio service. Many people will say, without the ARRL, there'd likely be no amateur radio service today. And, you know, I do believe that that's a true message. At the same time, I hope you come to Expo at Dayton, because it's hard to do nothing but smile when you're in the ARRL Expo area at Dayton. Talk about levity. I mean, members and non-members alike are welcome to join in the fun there. And it's just great fun. I mean, anytime you get many hundreds of radio amateurs together in one place, that's fun.
Well, you know, I guess the thing of it is like I said, $39 a year, what a deal. You're talking about advocacy, you're talking about amateur radio frequencies and the hobby itself being represented to government. And, you know, the relationship between the ARRL and the Federal Communications Commission and the Congress has been a long-term thing. In other words, this is not something that was, you know, you don't build these relationships overnight. It would be very, very difficult, almost impossible, for someone to come along or a group or an organization to try to duplicate, what the ARRL does. And the big thing, of course, is effectiveness, being able to be effective in that capacity. So, you know, once again, I think that, you know, $39 a year, you know, you wind up getting QST, you get access to this website and all these fantastic articles and projects and things that go back for years. And then this technical service that the league offers. And then you have the benefit of knowing that you're supporting the hobby in terms of you have an advocate with the United States government that's going to work toward the preservation and advancement of this hobby so that it's here for generations to come. So I think then, at that point, when you realize all these things, it's very appropriate to put aside differences in regards to, the minor details, and those things are fine to debate across the board, but you can only debate them if you're inside the room. You know, if you got an invitation to the party, well, then you can debate the issues. If you're outside the room, all you can do is grumble and complain. So anyhow, but the Dayton Hamvention is a great place it's a great place if you're wanting to get acquainted with a hobby. If you're a shortwave listener, how many shortwave listeners do we have? If you've never been to the Dayton Hamvention, this is a great place to come and not just get acquainted with amateur radio, but even further your hobby as a shortwave listener, because there's more toys there than you can shake a stick at. The flea market area is mind-boggling, you know. And of course, with the ARRL there, if you have the itch to want to get the ham license and get on board, this is the place to do it, because everything is there. One thing that I did want to you brought this up and we didn't talk about it, and I do want to touch on this just a little bit before I let you go. And I know this fellow here, Bob Itterbitson, is a busy fellow, and his plate is so full today. We are really, really intruding on his time. But
this is fun, though. Yeah. This is what we do.
We're talking to a lot of people here. But, you know, I've noticed, you know, it's really funny. My son, David, KG4, WXW. And I have to watch, because the call signs are in this family are crazy. I've got Matt, who's KG4 WXX, and David is KG4 WXW. And then Holly is KG4WXV. Oh, wow, Taylor, it's hard to keep track of this. It's a nightmare when we all check into a net at the same time. Anyhow, David has just been fascinated with QRP. Now, what spurs this, I don't know. But like I told you, he likes to take that little Yaesu radio of his, I think, that puts out 5 watts, and his TW2010, and him and Brian, my grandson, they take off to the park and set up. And he is just, he loves QRP. So, I from what I understand, the league has part of their I guess when I say their display or their area is going to be devoted to QRP. Can you tell me a little bit about that? For some reason, boy, this thing is really hot, especially amongst younger people.
Well, we'll have some actual QRP kits available for sale within the publication sale area of the league's exhibit area. We sell a book called Low Power for Communications, Low Power Communications, and there's a kit produced by MFJ that you can actually get with that book, and it has the instruction manual right in the book on how to build it. Hundreds and hundreds of people already this year have built that particular kit. Hamvention will also have a home brewing table set up at the event this year, where they will demonstrate a number of particularly low power transceivers and transmitters and receivers in a display that they've got set up. The QRP community, the low power QRP community also has a very large presence at Hamvention. They often have an event called 4 Days in May. At the same time as Hamvention, where the QRPers come together and talk about all the different things that they're doing. So there'll be lots of QRP stuff going on at Hamvention, both in the forums, stuff that people can buy and try their hand at a kit, or to visit the display area that Hamvention has set up on homebrew equipment.
You're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R, right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews, or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com.
QSO will be broadcasting live from the Dayton Hamvention, so we want you to come by and say hello. Find our booth and drop by and visit. And while you're at Dayton, be sure and go by the ARRL booth. Pick up one of the new Field Day t-shirts. Pick up a handbook. And check your ARRL membership. If you're not current, then rejoin. They usually have some kind of deal that if you join at Dayton, you get something. Well, I'd ask them about that. But pick up the new handbook. Pick up your t-shirt, your Field Day t-shirt. Matter of fact, pick up two or three. They make great gifts. And then come by our booth and wave the t-shirts at us and say hello. And stop by and chat with us on the air. Looking forward to seeing everybody at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention.
At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, "I want to win." Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, "I want to win," because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, "I want to win." Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email.
This is QSO, and now back to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R. You know, QRP, I like I said, it's very, very fascinating to so many people, and I think maybe the reason why, and this is just a theory I have, you can build a kit. You know, you can sit down with a soldering iron and put a few parts together and hook up an antenna, and you're on the air. And for the most part, we moved away when we lost people like Heathkit and Nightkit and all these companies. Of course, now there's new radio companies out that have kits available and that sort of thing. I think Elecraft is one of them that you can build. And I'm not familiar. I'm sure there's a bunch I'm not mentioning. But anyhow, there was a certain magic years ago when you would assemble a transmitter maybe out of one tube or two tubes in a crystal. And you hooked up that antenna and you went on the air with it. Now, no one thought about it in terms of QRP. It was just you built this thing, you know. And I think maybe what a lot of them only put out 5 watts, 10 watts, you know, some maybe as high as 30. I remember the original old Amico CW kit. That was really, really popular. Now you find them on eBay for several hundred dollars. I think the thing sold for $15-$20 at the most. Anyways, it's a nostalgic thing. But I think with QRP, this is where folks get their hands right in the middle of it, because the CW transmitter circuits are so simple in terms of being able to build. Folks are limited time-wise today. We don't have all the time in the world we would like to have. So this gives you a chance to kind of really get down and get your hands dirty. And of course, anytime you build something, the mind is challenged. And you begin to pick up on concepts and learn things that you normally wouldn't learn or even realize, you know, if you're just an appliance operator. So I kind of wonder if that isn't part of the fascination. Of course, there's people that buy QRP transmitters and never build a thing, and they love QRP. So I guess maybe my theory only half holds true. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it's also a great launching pad into a more project building on a more complicated level. But again, once that bug bites and you build that first QRP radio and you have the benefit of actually having fun making your first contact on something that you spent a weekend soldering together and building, that's a pretty engaged radio amateur. And I would probably venture to say that somebody who goes through that experience is likely to be someone that will stick around in the service a lot longer.
Well, you know, I've taken up an awful lot of your time, but I had a note handed me, and there's a road I want to go down as I guess I want to say as a conclusion to
sure.
our conversation today, other than the fact that I do want to open the floor up to you there to say anything or anything that you want to add to this. I want you to be jump right in there and talk about anything else we forgot to talk about. But I'd like to hear your story as to how you got into ham radio, what sparked your interest in the very, very beginning stages, the first time you ever even heard the word, the first station you ever saw, and then what
sure.
led you down that road.
Well, that's a great question, Ted. Well, let's see. I'm 40 years old today, these days, and I got involved in amateur radio as, I was probably a middle school student, and the vice principal of the middle school made an announcement during the class day, and he said, geez, if anybody wants to become a ham radio operator and get a license, come to my office after school. And there were about a dozen of us that went to the vice principal's office after school for a good reason. And he then offered a ham radio class for about 8 weeks, and we all got our tickets. And then he was able to procure some equipment for his office. And, boy, I operated a Drake TR-7A for a number of years during middle school, right from his office, working the world on mostly Morse code at that time. And that was really my first experience. It was really because somebody took interest in working with youth, and that was really my first taste of amateur radio. It was a good experience. It's one that I often tell to other school teachers and school administrators, because that's all it takes is a champion for the cause, some gear, and the passion to want to instruct and mentor some young people.
Well, now, it was a TR-7, probably, was that the most primitive radio that you'd...
Oh, I know. But it was a great Drake radio that we were operating in that shack, and he had fixed tri-bander up on the roof of the school, and boy, we just worked all over the place with that.
Well, the reason why I ask is because, you know, I go back to the days of the TR-3, you know.
Oh,
and,
gotcha.
You know, so I wondered. I was going to say, because a TR-7, now that, you know, that's a new radio.
Well, we had great fun, and so it's been a long time. I think I'm eligible now to join the Quarter Century Wireless Association at 40 years old, so which is pretty cool.
Well, what about the Heathkit rig you were talking about? You said you still...
You know, after I got my ticket in middle school, of course, the next logical thing was to ask my parents to help me get a station for the house. So like every good middle school student, I worked really hard on a paper route and saved my pennies, and my dad and I walked by a TV repair shop when they had TV repair shops, and there was a Heathkit SB-102 sitting in the window, and it was filled with smoke, and it sat on that shelf in that TV repair shop for a number of years, but we brought that thing home and cleaned up the boards and took every tube out and went down to the local Radio Shack store and plugged all the tubes into the tube tester, replaced any of the bad ones, and got that manual from ARRL in order to be able to figure out how to tune the thing. You know, you got to dip the plate and tune it, and got that thing on the air. And boy, that was my station for about 5 or 6 years from home, and how I worked my first 50 states.
Now that stuff is magic. You know, you think of, you know, I guess the whole idea of the tubes glowing in the dark. You know, you turn the lights out in the room, and you You could see the thing all lit up. And there was a certain smell they had, too. These tube radios.
Oh, there was. There was. In fact, my parents always knew when the bedroom door was closed in the wintertime that I was either warming the bedroom with the radio or I was on the air, or both.
And of course, for those that built Heath kits, you know, that was a real magic thing, you know, to finish up the last little thing, and you've gone through the manual, you've double checked everything, and everything looks like it's in place, and you plug it in, and you sit there for a few seconds, and you hesitate, thinking, should I throw the switch or not?
Right. Well, it was a great little radio to use for a number of years, and I had so much fun with amateur radio in middle school and high school, and then later when I went to college up at Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester, Mass, I got to enjoy being the radio club president there for a few years and operating a top-notch station at the college there. And then shortly after that, being employed by the ARRL and worked my way around the organization from the volunteer examining department to the education services group and these days with membership marketing and publications. I still enjoy getting on the air. I do a lot of amateur radio for work, but I still enjoy operating on the air for contests. And I take my gear up to the Cape every year to get on the air from Marconi Beach.
There you go. That sounds very cool. You know, for the folks that are coming to Dayton, they always have a deal. In other words, if you renew your membership at Dayton, what is it this year?
Sure. Let's see. We've got a number of free books for joining ARL for 1 year. So come to the booth, sign up for $39, and you'll walk away with either a repeater directory or a couple of other books that we've identified for a free premium for signing at Dayton. But also, if you sign for 3 years, you could get a free 2010 handbook. And if none of that sounds exciting, I think they'll give you a $10 gift certificate that you can use towards the purchase of anything at the ARL table there in Dayton just for signing up at the booth.
So now, let me ask you this question. The 3-year membership would be how much total? Do you have a calculator handy? I don't have one.
You know, I think it's not actually, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's not actually 39 times 3. It's slightly discounted as well. So a couple dollars less than 3 years at 39.
Okay, so you figure 3 and 4 is 12, so 120, it'd be less than $120 or something like that for 3 years.
That's right. I'm sure they certainly came up with some amount that'll sweeten the deal for somebody interested in doing that.
And you get
so you walk away with a free handbook and also a commitment to support the organization for 3 years. Everybody who comes to the booth can walk away with this year's free 2010 ARL Dayton button. And if you've seen folks walking around Dayton Hamvention with their caps on, you'll quickly find out that the Dayton button is a prize keepsake, and folks rush the ARL booth right when the door is open to pick up their buttons, and that's a freebie for anybody that stops by the booth.
Well, you know, I was going to say with the handbook, one of the things that we want to just mention briefly, and that is there's the ARRL antenna handbook. But I want to relate a story just very quickly. I was looking for some information the other day. I was looking for a particular formula and some charts and configurations. And this is nothing against the NAB, but we went to Las Vegas, and I went through the NAB bookstore. And the NAB handbook is like $200, okay? I mean, and you know, it's got a lot of information in it. But you know what? The information that's in that is not as hard-hitting as the ARRL handbook. The ARRL handbook especially when it comes to transmitters, is very hard hitting information. A lot of practical formulas, a lot of practical diagrams, a lot of practical theory, and then also the ARRL antenna handbook goes into far more detail in regards to propagation, ground systems. Oh man, I mean, you know, the book is full of stuff that's touched on in the NAB handbook. When you look at the price comparison and what you're getting, it's not a wonder that when I go into radio stations and I go into the engineering departments, I see more ARRL books on the shelf than I do NAB books, okay? Now, I'm probably going to make somebody mad, but I don't care. You're the marketing guy. What's the cost on the handbook this year if you were to order it online or whatever? What does the handbook and the antenna handbook sell for?
Yeah, the antenna book is $39.95, and the handbook is $49.95. Both products include a CD-ROM in the book that has the entire book in a fully searchable format on a CD as well. So you get a lot of bang for the buck. Plus, like I mentioned with the handbook, you get a largely brand new book from cover to cover with the 2010 edition. It's a really good deal, but this is another thing about the amateur radio community is we pride ourselves in producing resources and working with both authors and volunteer authors that enjoy delivering material to their peers in this radio service. And this isn't a place to sell resources that are hundreds of dollars. This is a place where we try to make the material available to everyone in the service. So it's unusual to have such technical publications at such a low price, but our audience are volunteers and people who do this for their passion of radio, and so the price tag comes along with that.
Well, I don't know. That's a deal. $39 for the handbook and $39 for the antenna handbook, and $49 for the actual radio amateurs handbook. But the antenna handbook is a priceless thing. I mean, when you get one, I'll tell you what. If you have a copy of the ARRL antenna handbook, okay, and you get one of Martin Jew's antenna analyzers, it doesn't get any better than that. Okay,
you can build anything and get on the air with anything.
It's amazing. Well, sir, I really thank you so much for your time you spent with us here. I know folks have really enjoyed listening to you. Once again, the call sign is NQ1R, and the fellow's name is Bob Interbitson. Your official title with the American Radio Relay League is the Marketing Director, is that correct?
Marketing Manager.
Marketing Manager.
Close enough. Okay. You can elevate me to Director, that'd be great.
Okay, there you go. We'll do that. But I look forward to seeing you at Dayton. Of course, we're going to be broadcasting from Dayton. And we still want folks to grab those Field Day T-shirts, get your T-shirt, and come by our booth and wave the T-shirt at us, because we're gonna start doing that every year now, I think, and that'll be a lot of fun. And the other thing too, I mentioned this: the Field Day T-shirts make excellent gifts for folks. So pick up two or three extras; they're great for hams. There's not a ham on earth that would not enjoy picking or getting one of those T-shirts for some birthday, even Christmas. Pick up a few extras because they're great gifts, and they help promote the hobby. They also help promote the league, and they're just a good deal. And last year we had a lot of fun with this, so I hope we have more fun this year than we did last year. But thank you so much for joining us, and once again, the Dayton Hamvention is coming up, and look for Bob there and Alan Pitts and all the rest of the fellows and the folks from the ARRL. This is your chance to meet all the folks from Newington. If you haven't been to Newington, Connecticut, and you see the names in QST and you see the names on the website, this is a chance to get up close and personal and meet these folks face-to-face. And we really appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks, Ted. I can't wait to see everybody there. And you mentioned the large number of shortwave listeners that catch your show as well. And we really want to welcome them to the ARRL Expo area. So please come one and come all, and come and shake our hand. And we'll look forward to having a great time at Hamvention.
It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna. And it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique.
They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
That wraps up this edition of QSO. A special thanks to our guest, Bob Interbitson, NQ1R. Be sure and tune in again next time for QSO. Thank you.